computer, and then you switch back to the pass-through keyboard mode. Slide. This is how it actually works. This magic is actually cryptography. I implemented RC4 for encryption and SHA-1 for hashing. And what we do is we generate a temporary password from the master password and the information. This is to prevent some problems with the RC4 cipher. Then the information gets expanded, so we can generate passwords that are longer than the information you entered. And then everything gets encrypted, Base64 encoded, and that's actually it. Yeah, slide. Here you can find everything on the website calc.pw. These slides can be found at calc.pw/sigint13. And as I have still some time, I've heard, we can go on, slide. There are actually some problems that I had. First of all is the ROM size of the Arduino. It actually has only 32 kilobytes of ROM, where the application is stored, and there is a bootloader, for example, that's needed for the keyboard emulation. There is a library for the LCD, the library for the USB host shield, the library I wrote for the encryption, so RC4 and SHA-1, and some other neat stuff. And actually, at the moment, it doesn't compile with a stable release, but with a beta release. I'm working on that. There are three things I'm currently working at. First one is a mobile version where I don't need the USB host shield. So there will be a solution where you have a normal number keypad so you can enter it like on a normal mobile phone. Another thing I work on is implementing or introducing that into a Sherry keyboard. So putting that between the actual keyboard matrix of the keyboard and the keyboard controller. And the third thing I'm currently working on is, I called it Arduroam, where I'm not limited to the ROM of the Arduino, but where I can put binary code into an EEPROM and have a small binary code interpreter that runs on the Arduino, so you can have, well, applications that are as large as the biggest EEPROM you've found. Slide. And another big problem I had was the ROM size. The Arduino has only 2 kilobytes of RAM, and, well, we do encryption on that, we do hashing on that, and the Arduino, or the ATmega, that's the microcontroller on that thing, isn't very good at handling memory. So when you have dynamically allocated memory and deallocate a chunk, it doesn't clean up anything. So when you do that regularly, as you do with string manipulations, your memory gets screwed up really fast. So I wrote a tiny memory manager that actually, well, just compresses this memory as soon as a chunk gets deallocated. And another real problem there was is that the ATmega doesn't know when there was a stack heap collision. So when the stack ran into the heap and overwrote each other, that's why this memory manager has a total number of bytes it handles and a total number of chunks it can generate. And if the memory is full or if the max number of chunks is, taken, then it doesn't work anymore and just outputs an error. Yeah, so thank you.
So, check. One new thing we decided to do this year was to do remote lightning talks. So some people pre-recorded their talks. Unfortunately, we found out about 10 minutes before coming into the room that for some reason my laptop does not want to give sound out. So we had to find another laptop real quickly. But we've got two interesting videos. One from Jake Rathburn, who did a tour of Hackerspaces. He's a singer-songwriter. And he has a video for you, and one from Griffin Boyce talking about an interesting set of tools called Cupcake. And hopefully we'll be able to get video out on one of these, because this one doesn't give sound and that one doesn't give video. So between the two of them, if we could just mash them up together, we could make something working. That might get a little complicated. And this is why normally when we do lightning talks, all of the slides are submitted in advance and they're all on one computer, because before having to switch, can you imagine every 5 minutes having to switch computers and having to run into the same set of problems like we have here? But hopefully we'll get this done shortly. Also, if you have a lightning talk of your own that you want to give, there's going to be another set of lightning talks at 1300 tomorrow, right here in the same room. And also, is there anybody who's planning on presenting a lightning talk today who I didn't manage to get a hold of over email or who I didn't manage to confirm with personally at some point today? Anybody? Okay. I mean, I could always just put the microphone in front of the speaker. Do you think that would work? Okay, we'll try that. Okay. Okay.
Okay, so on Mac OS, and if you use a guest account, you can't use an extra monitor.
secure. We need to find a new way to do it.
This is insane. Hey, what's going on? My name is Jake Rathburn. I'm a singer-songwriter from the U.S. And I love having fun with my audience, playing my original songs and also some covers. Right now I'm booking my next tour of Europe. My first trip was so great, I fortunately got on the RTL Hessen News promoting living room concerts, and that was a lot of fun. I also played a few hacker spaces while I was in Germany the last time. And what's cool about those shows is that I promote the shows and get a lot of new faces in, checking out your club, taking a tour even, and your club gets a nice little music event out of it. And just to let you know, my fee is covered by donations, or people can buy my CD if you'd like to, so there's no fee to the club. Boink! So it's a win-win. I get fans in your club, and you get exposure, and possibly some new members. Who knows, you might get some new... So it's a win-win.
Win-win!
Hi, my name is Griffin Boyce, and I just want to give a brief overview of my project called Cupcake. So what is Cupcake? Well, it's a suite of apps and browser extensions that allow you to create tour bridges without actually having to download and then install Vidalia or other software. This is really useful if you have a Chromebook or another lightweight environment where you don't want to actually download or install or root your device. And the bridges that this type of application makes are given to people who would otherwise be blocked from accessing the Tor network entirely, frequently China and heavily oppressed areas where bridges tend to burn out really fast. All right, so what is the data behind this? So I'm just going to go into the size of the Tor network right now and then go into what the actual projects for Cupcake are. So right now the Tor network is between 500,000 and 900,000 users connecting every day, and that's not always the same group of users, so it could be someone's only connecting once a week or once a month, so there's not a really easy way to figure out how large the user base is for Tor. But we do know that 25,000 users connect every day via bridges, and that sounds really amazing, but there are only 3,800 total nodes in the network. And only 1,800 of those are bridges, and that's not including the roughly 700 bridges created through various Cupcake applications and extensions. Right now, as you can really tell, Cupcake users are starting to represent a really big chunk of the Tor network, and while that does sound like I'm bragging a little bit, it's actually a really bad thing, and I'll get into that a little bit later. Cupcake Bridge is the extension for Chrome, and right now it has 677 users through the Google app, Google Web Store, and an unknown number of people are installing it from the GitHub page. It's very light, and as I said, it's Chromebook compatible. If you install it, you'll be transporting roughly 15 megabytes of data over into the Tor network every single day. And right now this represents about 28% of all Tor bridges, which is quite a lot. And there are plans for me to extend that into Firefox. I just accidentally haven't got around to it yet. There are also WordPress and Drupal plugins. Just like the Chrome extension, these are really easy to install. Basically, you just drag and drop the PHP files into your plugins or modules part of your website, go into your admin section and click update. So the problem with this is that visitors to your website must opt out if they want to not be bridges. So there's an interesting discussion around agency and consent on the internet. You know, and I could give some sort of larger soliloquy on this, but I think that I probably will not. Then there are Tumblr themes. Even unpopular themes get thousands and frequently hundreds of thousands of users. And you can multiply that times the number of people that are just randomly visiting the Tumblr, and those people all wind up becoming bridges. These grow very organically. And so after seeing an awesome blog theme and choosing to install it, you've already looked through everything, you're looking at the code, you're making sure that it's something that you want, and you can tell that it has the little cupcake badge at the very bottom. And this is a basic example. As you can see in the bottom, it's so tiny, but I add some text to the side to actually let people know that, hey, it's doing something extra and maybe you should pay attention to this. The really sweet part about running this on my Tumblr theme right now is that, you know, my Tumblr theme is of no consequence. It's all pop culture and terrible landscapes covered in terrible quotes. But the really great part about it is that when the CIA visits my blog, they briefly become part of the Tor network, which I think is really funny. So I created a Facebook app. This was a bit of an experiment, and I really didn't expect it to succeed. In the end, it sort of succeeded, and occasionally both has a user and makes a bridge at the same time. You know, Facebook has switched almost all of their traffic to being over HTTPS, which is absolutely wonderful for their users, but it makes it very improbable to make a WebSocket connection, because unfortunately we can't use secure WebSocket connections right now, and I will actually get into that a tiny bit later. Facebook is actually really difficult to set up because they're so incompatible with common Nginx server deployments. I could pretty much write an entire book about it called How to Piss Off All Your Developers All of the Time Forever. So future development plans. You know, I've tried a lot of things that didn't work and a lot of things that did. And so right now, the idea is to go forward with a Firefox add-on, games in HTML and JavaScript, you know, release it under a Creative Commons license, and hopefully they will spread. Also, the possibility of creating something for mobile. But trying to artificially rate limit something on a mobile device can be really tricky, because if someone's over, you know, 3G and they're only getting, like, you know, 20 kilobytes a second, you don't want them to become a bridge and then be limiting all these at-risk people to some crazy small amount of traffic bandwidth. It would be great if flash proxies and pluggable transports in general could make secure WebSocket connections. This is actually very difficult from a network engineering standpoint, but it's really so worth it to get involved with this. Now, granted, it does require you to work with Tor developers, but they really aren't as terrifying as they let on. Really, I promise. Earlier I said that Cupcake users are becoming a large part of the overall Tor network. And this is true. This is also kind of bad. So I really want people to be my competition. The network thrives on diversity. If one person is controlling a large portion of the Tor network, whether it's in bridges or exit nodes or, you know, middle relays, that actually tends to be kind of bad. So I would like more people to get involved, you know, branch my code, create code of your own, and sort of be my competitor and run a portion of the Tor network on your own as well. The awkward part about this is that even if I do nothing, the number of Cupcake bridges will eclipse all other nodes in the Tor network, and it's not unlikely that flash proxy projects as a whole will bring in hundreds of thousands of bridges on a daily basis. So I would love it if there were lots of people running this, and that way, you know, if something happens to me or, you know, the unthinkable happens and I lose interest in this project, that there are other people that will continue this work and allow it to grow more organically. And that's all I said. So there's my email. You can reach me on Twitter at Abditum. I'm on GitHub as Glamrock, and that's the link to the Stanford Crypto Lab where Flash Proxy was originally developed, and I rely on a lot of their back-end code for my implementation, so seriously major props to them. For my Facebook app, I actually got the game engine code, which was in JavaScript, from Nadeem Kobasi, who is very wonderful and allowed me to use that on that project. And overall, you know, I just want to say thanks for listening to me ramble for 8.5 minutes. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay, hi everyone. My name is Tomas Scholz. I'm an electronics engineer, and this is Vesna. Slide, please. Vesna is a wireless sensor platform, which means it's a small embedded ARM-based computer. It has an interface for various sensors, and it also has a radio that allows you to connect a cluster of these devices into a wireless mesh network. Devices like this are deployed all over the place, usually measuring various stuff like weather, energy consumption, pollution, and things like that. Slide. The institute where I work runs a few installations where sensors are mounted on light poles in boxes like this across a few cities in Slovenia. And the question was, well, can we use such a network for something more fun than just gathering boring statistical data? And an idea was, well, let's try to use the network to broadcast audio. Let's use each sensor node on a light pole to as an FM transmitter. And actually, as crazy as this sounds, there was actually some valid scientific reasons to try to set up something like this. So we were able to get a radio license from our local regulator. Slide, please. But okay, let's stand back a bit and do a quick sanity check. The radio we have on these sensors, which in case of Vesna is the CC1100 series from Texas Instruments, these radios are packet-based digital transmitters, and they operate on the short-range devices band, so 868 megahertz. On the other hand, the audio transmissions we'd like to simulate are analog continuous transmissions, and they operate usually on somewhat lower frequencies in the UHF band. So in the first glance, this looks kind of impossible, but slide, please. If you check the datasheet for this chip, it actually, you can find that there's a legacy mode that allows you to set infinite packet lengths, so you can get continuous transmissions, and the chip itself works pretty well down to 780 megahertz, which overlaps a bit with the band where studio wireless microphones are used, like the ones we see here used at SIGINT. The third issue is, so the distinction between the digital and analog modulation is a bit more involved, slide. But if you use frequency shift keying on the chip and limit yourself to just transmitting one bit of information per symbol, as shown here, the difference basically boils down to this. You get two different analog levels, and two different signal levels on the analog receiver side for each bit value in the digital data stream you transmit. Slide. So, of course, having just one bit audio is kind of useless, but you can exploit the fact that the digital transmission here has a much higher bit rate than the audio sample rate you need to transmit audio. So you can chop up the signal like shown here, which allows you to get more effective bits of signal resolution than what you would ordinarily have. And this is either called pulse width modulation or delta sigma modulation. It's both are kind of similar in effect. Slide. And of course, while those scientific reasons I mentioned would be perfectly fine with just a tone being transmitted or something like that, that sounded kind of boring, so I implemented a software synthesizer that is capable of playing MIDI files on these sensor nodes. Actually, after listening to the algorithmic music talk today, this kind of looks very overcomplicated, but it kind of works. And slide. So these are the capabilities that the system is capable of right now. You get six simultaneous channels at 25 kilohertz audio sample rate and 4 bits of effective signal resolution. What prevents us from going having more quality audio here? One is that the buzz between the CPU and the radio here has kind of a stupid implementation that uses bit banging on the GPIO ports, so it uses a lot of CPU time, and you also start running out of RAM if you go to higher audio sample rates, because you have to increase various buffers in the synthesizer and in the bus implementation. Also, with this, only 4 bits is kind of hard to also transmit the pilot tone that some of the studio microphone receivers need to unmute the reception. Slide. So once you have all this in place, the question is, can this be useful for something more than just making all the wireless studio microphones in the area play silly chiptunes? Well, actually, I'm not sure, but definitely a lot of fun was involved setting this up. Slide. You can see the video demonstration here. You can get the source code and, of course, also some more in-depth information. And if you want to talk about this, find me here at SIGINT. Thank you for your attention.
Good evening, everybody. First of all, I got to say that I feel self-conscious amongst so many geeks, as I am not at all. I am a media management major here at the University of Cologne with an emphasis on social entrepreneurship. I submitted this Prezi about 2 hours ago to FAR, as I thought this event is like the right spot to introduce you guys a project, which I think to be pretty amazing, which is Foodloop. And again, how many native English speakers is there amongst you that don't speak any German at all, as this presentation is in German for most part, so I just gotta know what to do. I wanna introduce you Foodloop, a database project that is linked and to the food retail industry. Next slide, please. So everybody over here, just read this little pitch line for themselves while I just focus on this one English speaker over here. What we want to do is we are developing a database that is linked to the back end of a supermarket, specifically the barcode system, where a supermarket can upload everything that is basically usually thrown away up to half a year before it expires. We're talking about cans here, like beans. Supermarkets have their standards that say if there is a bean can that has less than half a year until it expires, we usually tend to throw it away or donate it to things like Bread for the World or Die Tafel. But reality looks slightly different, where there's like huge excess and amounts of food which is still being thrown away. So we want to have a data platform where we can transfer all these products before the supermarket decides to throw them away, and pushes it to our external servers, so that we can then relay these discounted products to our app. So everybody that is eager to save money with high quality food products, next slide please. With high-quality food products, can actually download that app and just scroll through our app and see which supermarket has fruit products, yogurts, milk that is only 5 days left until has only 5 days left until it expires, or fruit, vegetables, everything basically that has an expiration date and a barcode can be transferred into our app system. Just to give you a few facts and numbers, only in Germany we have 1 billion worth of food that is thrown away prior to the expiration date. Average here differs between all the retailers. Aldi, for instance, throws yogurts away 7 days before they expire. Rewe does the same thing 5 days before they expire. That's their kind of, we just want to sell fresh food things. There's biomarkets such as Denso or Alnatura who are a little more closer to the actual expiration date. And yes, this is 1 billion of a 230 billion market, which makes about 1% in total. Like I said, they donate to Tafel and Brot for the World, Brot für die Welt, which like this 1% is 2.3 billion. This is what they end up actually take out of the shelves, are going to throw it away or donate it. Out of these 2 billion worth of food a year in Germany, they donate like 1 billion, but there's still 1 billion in euros left that they do throw away. Next slide, please. And I had the idea for this idea for Food Loop like half a year ago when I did some research, just messing around with friends, what kinds of app there's missing in this world, and did research on the internet. And has any one of you ever heard of a barcode called GS1 Data Bar? Funnily not. There's a new barcode that has been introduced in 2008 already in the retail industry worldwide. This barcode, the only special feature about it is that it lets you encode the expiration date, the charge number, or the product weight information within that barcode. So imagine you have a yogurt or whatever product you buy in the grocery store. The barcode lets the store know what the expiration date is. So the advantage for them is they have an accurate detail management system. Like you scan a product at the checkout and the supermarket knows, now I have like 7 yogurts left that have this and that expiration date, which is kind of cool for the grocery store just to have a better overview and not have people having to go through the lanes and check what's when expiring, when do I have to throw it away. So they've been adapting that barcode from 2008 on, as I said. Next slide, please. The solution we offer is, as I just said, you guys pretty much have already understood it from that first pitch line that I gave you. It's pretty simple, not much tech information at all to understand it. We have a back-end system that is connected and hooked up to the individual grocery stores. We have 5 major ERP resource planning systems throughout this entire world, where SAP is the market leader with a share of 21%. And we have SAP as a partner in the so-called SAP Startup Focus Program. Most people of you might have already heard about HANA, probably, where they're trying to reinvent the wheel by doing some real-time in-memory database management. And SAP decided to push this and adopt us to their Startup Focus Program, where they are providing us with free licenses for their HANA software and support us with a so-called development accelerator. And tell us to develop and then pitch us and give us access to their networks where they install all their retail systems throughout this world, basically. Yeah, here on the right hand side you see how this thing's world. This, I guess, this is nothing new for you guys. So next slide, please. As this presentation was for a previous business competition that I participated in, this is a so-called business case. Even though I put an emphasis on being a social entrepreneur. I want to improve the world, not make money or get rich just because I'm studying management. This is not what I'm after at all. So what we want to do is like make everyone benefit from this idea, like save our resources and reduce waste, have grocers. They might even make more money because imagine such a system working with an app. People go into a store, buy a reduced yogurt or sausage or whatever, things that are just lasting for 5 more days. And on their way to the checkout, this is they buy like fully priced product as well. So I don't know how this will turn out, if a grocery store will end up making more money and this will increase consumption, as there is no pilot case in this whole world. But our basis is just to actually have less waste and save the money, save the resources. Yes. Next slide, please. And the market in Germany is that we have here only 55,000 grocery stores that can use this. The barcode are being adapted right now. We talked to the so-called Kaufland, who said, "Christoph, this is a great idea. Please come back in 5 years." And that was just like 4 months ago. "Please come back in 4 years. We still need time to adapt this barcode. We only have it on 2 products right now." I said, "Great, let's then give it a shot and do a pilot project." So people are open to do and work with us. I talked to the Rewe Informations, I am IT head, Mr. Siebenhaar. I don't know if any of you guys know him, but he was like, "Hey, great idea, cool. We want to do that as a add-on into our Rewe app. So yeah, we buy your guys' programmer and build this into our app. That's cool." And I was like, "No, this is not the purpose. We want to act like the Tafel, do something that helps people donate money and reduce the food waste and save money. Something that is not just for one retailer, but for everybody, that everyone can connect to like they do to the Tafel. The only thing that all retailers in Germany have in common, they all donate to the Tafel. That's what we want to do. And the money that we make, we don't want to take anything away from any social organization. The money that we earn, we are going to donate to organizations such as the Tafel or local communities. Imagine you buy things. Our business model is we make 20% of the actual price that you buy the product with. This will be verified by using the app. You go to the checkout, you show your app with a QR code or with NFC in a couple of years, and so the actual transaction can be linked to our app, and we get a good overview of who actually use the app to buy things. We get our money. We can donate to local organizations. This is what we're after. So the Rewe guy was like, yeah, cool. I'm going to buy this. And like he said, Rewe Austria has like all their products already labeled with this new barcode, the so-called GS1 data bar, and the Germans are following next year. And he was like, yeah, we're going to steal this. It's nice. That's what he said right in my face. It's a good thing. And I was like, cool that I had an idea for a commercially viable product before the commercial people even thought about it. That's nice. But we have a unique selling proposition, which is the value. Like, we do the IT infrastructure for everyone under a multi-partner combination, which means everybody has an advantage. Like, if a Rewe is in our app next to an Aldi, which both said they had no problems with as long as they can't compare prices directly. Like, you open an our app, you can go either into the Rewe way or into the Aldi way, but you can't compare prices directly. That's where Aldi and Rewe both said, we'd be fine with that. That's cool with us. We do still need some money. We already got $100,000 from the so-called, or we're about to get it from the so-called Exist Gründerstipendium here in Cologne. We got offices sponsored by the University of Cologne. We are collaborating with the company GS1 Germany, who is the quasi-monopolist in the whole wide world with providing barcodes. Their business model is, hey, retailer, here you give us X amount of money and we provide you with barcodes on an annual basis, which is, yeah, their business model. And they were like kind of, Damn, why didn't we have that idea back in 2008 when we launched that barcode? Because it's a little dragging along since like 2008, imagine 5 years, and it's not much changed from the introduction. Like, retailers didn't adapt that barcode this well, but they will until next year. So we still have a little heads up to develop and go and talk to people. And we've talked to all the retailers who are eager to work with us. But my position right now is like, I'm always talking about we and me. I'm switching, as you guys might have noticed, which is, I have like 3 consultants that all have their full-time jobs and are working and are like totally committed and love the idea of pushing that. But none of them has like full time to actually go with me to pitch meetings with the retailers, to the GS1 companies. They all tell me what to do and how I have to pay a freelancer, write a Pflichtenheft just to narrow it down ideally. But I don't have anybody that like a CTO best friend, which I would need. Like, anybody that is hard-blooded and loves the idea, dedicated, and would be eager to talk to me. Yeah. Besides that, I have a PR lady and a business angel, and yeah, would love just to spread the word. I would even be fine if somebody steals that idea of you guys. Please bring this out into the world and develop it. Make it happen. I think time is right. We have this barcode. We have apps. People bring their own devices everywhere. They do the research about prices online everywhere in this world. And if you have this possibility of saving money by just using an app and going to a grocery store, we save the money and we save our nature, like, which is restricted. Like, we don't have unlimited resources. So I'd be totally fine to provide you with all information that I've collected within the past half year. If you guys don't like my face already, then please go ahead and do it. I just think the time is right, and I would love to give this idea away or have people talk to me or anything. Is there another slide? Yes, there is. Yes, we are kind of, I have mock-ups. This is what my consultants have been doing with me the past half years. They just do mock-ups and tell me which database I should use and how the servers should be set up. And the most challenging thing will be the interface, the connection to the individual backends, as there is 5 major backends of 5 ERPs in this world that you have to program this with. But as I said, we have SAP on our side, who has 1/5 of the worldwide market share. So we do this whole HANA thing, even though we would not even need real-time. The thing would work like this: like, a supermarket pushes every 15 minutes their current stock information about what so-called food loop offers they have, and people can go and see that in that app. We did the use case already. This is what I can do without programming. I wrote SAP and told them what I was going to do, and they were also in California, Silicon Valley. Hey, great, let's do this. Come to Silicon Valley, ideally. So here we have more programmers and have more direct contact to you. Last week, they switched me to their Ireland fraction. They were like, Christoph, we want to give you more support on a timely basis. So the 8 hours difference is too much, as I don't have too many clues about programming. I'm open with you guys. So I keep bugging them like almost every day. And they're pretty cool with me. But yeah, this is the thing we're working on. If anyone's eager to work with SAP HANA, we have free licenses. And I would even give you guys access to that, if anyone's down to just do it, basically. which is not as such a, so much of programming. I know SAP HANA is watching videos and doing things. It's not much of coding at all, as far as my concerning goes. And last line says less information, as they usually would say more information, but this website is just like, yeah, it's set up. There is a few pages, but not much information on it. That was it. If you guys want to talk to me afterwards, please come and see me. I'd be happy to give you more information in German. Thanks.
Check, check. Jan, are you here somewhere? Jan? Okay, well, if Jan's not here, we have the last presentation of the day. Let me make sure I can... Yep, okay, great. And you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi. I'm Asbjorn from LabChat. I've just been at a week-long festival with the rest of my hackerspace. And some other organizations, like the local Lumen Capacity Library and Fab Lab from Southern Denmark. Next slide. So at this large 130,000 people the festival, we've been located at the white spot there. So next slide. So this is the aerial view of the festival. If you go back one slide, then the area on the aerial photo is the one here. So it doesn't have the area where we are in. It's only half of the festival. So you take next slide. Then I've tried to find some overview pictures. The press office there didn't have any aerial photos of the hackerspace itself, but we had 20 times 20 square meters, where we put three containers and a large wooden structure. And it was basically busy all week long. If you take the next slide. And we have had a lot of activities like that busy the whole week. So take the next slide. So we have been having a lot of workshops. Like do your mobile charger or a small flashlight like this that we've been trying to teach people to solder. So next slide. And people have been building speakers and some small guitars and hanging them with putting book covers on them and so on. So next slide. Yeah, these small flashlights here that people have been soldering and also playing with human synthesis. And take next slide. And then we also had some British girls from London Hackerspace that have been playing with making their own dildos. But we weren't really allowed to have that on the workshop program. But we kind of did it anyway. Next slide. And people have also been making backgammon games and cigarette titles and stuff like that from old books and tables and so on. Yeah, next slide. Benches. And also the library had closed down one division, so we had all the books from or some of the books from there, and a lot of old tapes that people didn't really want to use anymore. So they were doing some concert with like having 10 different cassette players and then turning them on and off. And also just taping different tapes together. Next slide. And we also had our biology department from LabTet, the biology guys, doing some biology workshops and bacteria tests from the lake and the toilet. And take next slide. And we also had some laser cutting going on. I think that's the last, or if you take next, there's a little bit more, I guess. Yeah. We also had some t-shirt printing or silk press stuff. Not sure what is if that's the correct thing in English, but yeah. We take next one. Then we also had some Germans that wanted to use some of these old tent pipes that had been blown away on Sunday. So they started on Monday or something like that, just building a large tent, and they've been there every day since then. And used like, three plates on the angle grinder, but they're getting pretty close now. When I left yesterday, they didn't have the last pieces assembled, but now they are beginning to make the cover. So they'll probably get it done before the festival ends on Sunday. You take next slide? Yeah. I'm Philip Zapp, and if you come to Copenhagen, come visit us. Yeah. Great. That's it.
All right, thank you for coming. That concludes the lightning talks for today. If you have some 5 to 10 minute presentation that you'd like to submit, instructions for doing so are on the SIGINT website, sigint.ccc.de. And thank you again for coming. See you.